My name's Chris, I'm an addict.
Hi, Chris.
It's really good to be here. It's nice to be able to share for 40 minutes without getting a car waved in my face and talk about my favourite subject, which is me. I think I've been to this meeting three times and I've shared for it. So this is the third time I've been here and the third time I've done the chair. The first time I'd done the chair, someone come up to me after the meeting and said, "I don't really like the way you share." Okay, it's not for me that, mate. Keep that to yourself, cunt.
There you go.
I was asked not to swear before doing the meeting, before starting the chair. Look, I've started with the worst swear words you can start with. Anyway, I'm just going to tell my story, really. I'm obviously going to mention drugs. That's why we're all here, really. It's not just other stuff that we find out along the way. It's because I'm a drug addict and I don't want to take drugs no more. It's why I come to Narcotics Anonymous. And when my drug career started, it was like fun. I remember buying an eight for Leb for £8. Do you know what I mean? It was a horrible pub. It used to just fluff up. And I couldn't even skin up. I didn't know how to skin up. I was just like, oh, what am I doing? I was only about 14 or something. And two puffs, the joint was gone. I was like, oh, what's that about? And I didn't really like it, but I persevered. And and I went on to like £15 for an eighth, a Temple Ball, or Red Seal, or Gold Seal, but jumping back a bit, you know, growing up, there was something wrong with me. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I felt there was something wrong with me. I didn't fit in wherever I was. I didn't fit in at school. I didn't fit in indoors. I didn't fit in around the flats with my mates. I just felt uncomfortable a lot of the time. You know, and even when I was like taking drugs with my pals, I still felt a bit uncomfortable, not really fitting in. You know, I grew up in Islington, North London, before it was gentrified and trendy. And, working class council estate, brought up by my mum and my nan, done a fantastic job with me and my brother. You know, my old man weren't about. Never really got any information about my dad that was any, you know. And grew up thinking, what you don't know don't hurt you. And in fact, he was a C-U-N-T anyway. That was, bless my mum, but she was wounded by him. So, it was all that sort of stuff going on. Anyway, so I'm puffing Leb and Red Seal and trying to fit in to the round the flats with the so-called chaps, with me Farrah's on, me Pringle jumper. Do you know what I mean? Pair of Diadora trainers, and just trying to fit in. Going out the pub, Friday night, bottle of beer, talking out the side of my mouth. Didn't really fit in. Wasn't really me. I wasn't a gangster. I wasn't a chap. I wasn't, any of that. There was a few of them about, but I wasn't, it wasn't really me, but I was taught right from wrong from an early age. I was instilled in good beliefs and good morals from my family, from my mum and my nan. So I had this sort of blueprint of sorts to so I wanted to achieve, I wanted to do something. I wanted to, and the Holy Grail where I was from at that time, I left school with no qualifications. I went all the way to boys' school. I learned to play two bob up the wall and I learned how to play football. Didn't really, wasn't really great for getting a career, getting a job. But so the Holy Grail then for a kid like me who comes off a council estate was to get an apprenticeship for the council. That was like, you're laughing. It's like getting on the print or something. It's a closed shop. And my mum supported me and I'm writing out all these applications. I never got an apprenticeship. I never got in. So the school obviously knew I was an academic, so they put me out on work experience when I was supposed to be doing exams. So I got this job and I carried on with this job. It was like a fanboy just delivering food. And then I got a job in the post office as a cadet on a YTS scheme. 25 quid a week it was then, wasn't it? But the union was really strong with the post office then, so they said, no, you can't pay them 25 quid a week. So I thought he was getting £107 a week. It's a lot of money then. Could buy a lot of Leb and Red Seal. You know what I mean? Just had to give me mum a couple of quid. 15 quid, I think I'd give me mum. 15 quid, give her a week. But actually, no, I'd progressed then. I'd progressed from the Red Seal and the Leb by then. By the time I was working, I'd progressed through the drugs. But you know, so what I'm trying to say is I was trying to carve a life out for myself. I was trying to, you know, achieve. I was trying to, you know, be a success of whatever that meant, of sorts, you know what I mean? But, and, you know, another thing, you know, growing up, not feeling part of, feeling uncomfortable, I just did not have it in the bank to talk to girls. Not happening. Do you know what I mean? Just didn't have the confidence, didn't have the words. Used to look at some of my mates and think, how do you do that? I mean, they're just chatting, and I just think, how the fuck do you do that? I'm just like, so we ran the flats one day, and you know what it's like, your kids. So this girl comes up to me, my mate fancies you. So I was like, oh, what? So I just, so I just went over to this girl and I said hello to her, and that was it. So we were for 6 years. Sweet, you know what I mean? It's easy, job done. I didn't really talk to her in the 6 years, but you know, we stayed together. We tried, do you know what I mean? So I'm with this girl. I get this job in the post office. I move out from my mum's. I get a flat with this girl. We got like a little sort of temporary gaff in Fringery Park. It had a fucking outside toilet. Oh, it was terrible. But just prior to that happening, I was round the flat still in the Pringle jumper and the Farrah's, talking outside of my mouth, bunking off school, doing whatever I was doing. And I was having it with a little crowd around the manor, you know, we used to have fights with other areas. It weren't really fights, it was just chasing each other down the street, you know what I mean? Whoever, stand, and someone would run and that's it, boom, everyone's gone. And then they'd run the next time, you know, so it was like, that's how it was. And, you know, so one day we were in an arcade, all of a sudden the doors burst open, firma geezers come in, I got plunged up about four times. I went like that against the machine, I thought, I don't want a fucking Mars bar on my face, so I just went like that against the machine, I got one in my arm, two in my head, two in my gut. And at that point I thought, fuck the Farrah's and the Pringle jumper. I'm not, you know, this ain't a bit of me. What am I doing? Who am I kidding? I'm not, you know. So there was a little firm. By then, we used to slip off, some of us. There was a couple of us, you know. And I come from an area, like, where I come from, it was really all right to go out to the pub, sniff Charlie, talk out the side of your mouth, but it really weren't okay if you slipped off and had a £10 bag of heroin. You was a low-life scumbag. But there was a little firm that used to do that, used to slip off and get a tenner Joey. And I got in with that firm. So at that point when I got stabbed up, I thought, you know what, I'm dropping the gangsters out and I'm going with the £10 Joey. Because I liked that drug. I liked it. You know, I used to call it my brown overcoat. Once I had that on, it was like, oh, nice. Didn't mind spewing up. Yeah, mine all the scratching. Oh, my. I loved it. Loved it. And so all that's gone on, and then I'm, you know, in the flat with a girl trying to make, you know, so I'm trying to cut, you know, I'm taking drugs, I'm doing whatever I'm doing, but I'm trying to be whatever. I'm trying to, you know, be a productive member of society. And, but. I don't know how this stuff works, and obviously this is all hindsight. A lot of this is what hindsight. A lot of this is sort of 20 years in recovery, doing some work on myself and being having some information so I can talk about stuff like that with that head on. You know, so that little baby or that little, I don't know how old I was when my old man left, right? But I don't know how this stuff works. But that little baby somehow took it on board that it was down to me that he left. So that left me with extreme insecurity, extreme, painful insecurity. I'll give you an example. So I'm with this girl. I'll be walking down the road with her, and I'd have this gear going on. And then I'd spin on her, and I'd go, "What are you fucking looking at him for?" And she'd go, "Who? I'm not looking at anyone." It was so horrible, so painful to be like that. But by then, once it's come out, that's it. So that'll just continue. That'll just, you know, later that day, me and her end up in a tear-up of some sorts. It just played out like that. And it was so painful, but just kept... horrible gear. So I'm in this relationship. We're trying to, you know, I'm trying to do this shit. I'm trying to do this stuff. I'm trying to, but it's just, even with the drugs, it's just painful. It's just painful. So eventually my behavior just creates the relationship to end. And I found that just incredibly, it was devastating. 20 odd years of age, back at my mum's, black bag full of clothes, drug habit, no girlfriend, fucking hell. That's when my drug use sort of took off. That's when the reins kind of come off a little bit. The trying to be normal or the trying to be, you know, just took off. And then I couldn't work, you know, I couldn't turn up. I turn up, you know, I worked in a post office. I used to turn up, they go, "Oh, go and do a delivery." So I'd go out with this big fucking bag of mail and I'd buy, straight down to score. Open all the letters in the dealer's gaff as he's serving me up the gear, looking for a tenner in the, you know, poor Johnny's fucking birthday money from his auntie Flo. You know, that's handy, yeah. So, and then just have a bit of gear and go back to work. So obviously that didn't last too long. No. Come on top. And then it just escalated and escalated and escalated until the point where I was unemployable and I was just running about doing kamikaze stuff, trying to get a pound note, because I don't really class myself as a criminal. I wasn't a criminal. But I ended up committing crime because of drug addiction and proper kamikaze, you know. So obviously, eventually, I got nicked and a surprise, surprise. You know, I'd run in gaffs and run. It's like on the way out, I'd stop, smile for the camera. It was so on top, unbelievable. But I'd come out of the gaff, get rid of me cobber, cut me ear, go and score and think, I'm all right. I'm not going to get nicked. But I got nicked and I got quite a long prison sentence for my first sentence. And fuck me, that's hard work in them gaffs, you know. Being a drug addict, you know. You're out here in the community, you go and score off someone, you get a bit of tick, you don't see him again. You just go and score off someone else, didn't you? But in them gaffs, you see the fucker every day. Every fucking day you see the geezer. Do you know what I mean? I was in one gaff, there used to be a queue on a Friday of about 30 geezers, all sending money out to the same address. It was mental. But you know what, it was torturous, because my family are straight goers. My mum, my nan, bless them. And they followed me all around the country because of that prison sentence. And my name used to be shaking on visits because she wanted to give me a couple of quid to get whatever I needed to get. Not to get drugs. In her mind, it was to get, like, snout or to get toiletries or whatever. And she'd be on the visit, but she'd be shaking and then she'd give me a score when my mum went up to get the tea or whatever. And it pains me to think that I put them through that. Really pains me to think I put them through that. And I didn't learn anything. You know, my mate got clean before I got nicked, and he's still clean. And he come to meetings, and he see me, and he didn't really, you know, start ramming it down my throat. But he, when I was on that sentence, he used to send me in literature every now and then. And I read it because I was down the block and I had nothing else to do, to be honest. No light bulbs went on. It's a shame, really, but no light bulbs went on. Anyway, I come out of that prison sentence and by then, everyone gone. You know, I'd done the damage with my family, they dropped me out. Everyone had sort of left me life because I was a pain in the arse. So I come out, went to probation. I said, can't really help you. Stuck me in an hotel in Ivy Grove, on me jacks. No one to talk to. Sort of kind of all right, because I'd been away for a bit, but not really all right. And I thought I'd just have, you know, just have a little go, I'll be all right. That was 6 weeks of my life. It was the worst 6 weeks of my life. I used to spend it just walking about, hoping something to fall out of the sky. You know, I went over a couple of times in that gap. I just lost the ability to look after myself properly. Anyway, so what I had an idea. I woke up one morning, I was clucking, and I thought, you know what? Consciously, my first thought consciously was I'm going to go and get some money. But what I didn't realise was, unconsciously, what I was thinking was, I'll go and get nicked. Because I can't do this no more. I can't cope out here. I can't deal with it. I can't even feed myself. I can't even look after myself properly. I've lost the ability to do everything. I'm starving hungry all the time. I lived in Ivy Grove. There was a chip shop. I went in the chip shop. It was so embarrassing. I went in the chip shop and she'd give me a bag of chips on tick. And I was so grateful. But you know what? I couldn't pay her. I used to avoid the chip shop because I didn't have the whatever it was, a nicker to give her for a bag of fucking chips. God, and I could go in them gaffs and talk about all the money I used to earn and all the bollocks talk, but I was fucking on the floor. So that's what I done. I went and got myself nicked. And I thought, gutted when I got nicked, but relieved. So I had my will and my life over to the care of HMP Wormwood Scrubs. And I have not got to take no responsibility whatsoever. I've got a bit of identity in there. The cleaner on the twos. In the big wide world out here, I'm just wandering about the streets, just a junkie trying to look for a tenner to get a bit of gear. In there, you know, it's sad, really sad. So that's when recovery started for me. I don't know where it come from. I was getting allocated, I've got my sentence and I was getting allocated. I'm in the office with this officer and I don't know where it come from, but it's just, you know, higher power, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? First person I ever asked for help was a prison officer. I said, Governor, look, I've got an horrendous drug problem. I've got to sort it out. I've got to sort it out. And he went, how serious are you? And I went, I'm fucking even considering going... Oh, I swore again. I'm even considering going to the max clat you've got here. And this other woman in the office went, oh, no, you don't want to go up there. It's full of sex offenders and everything. And I went, well, that's how serious I was. And in that moment, I was that serious. In that moment there, in that office with them two prison officers, I was that serious. And he went, all right, well, you need to keep your mouth shut. We're going to allocate you to a prison that's got a 12-step treatment, that's got a treatment centre. We don't allocate from this prison to there, but keep your mouth shut, you can go there. I thought, all right then. Left the office, that moment's gone. It's gone. I'm running around the landing looking for something to bang up with. Because I have got no control over this at all. So anyway, I'll get to this gaff. They make you sign a bit of paper to say you agree to voluntary piss tests. And then you have to go and do a couple of things. You go to groups and you're meant to do a couple of NA meetings a week until you wait to go on the treatment programme. So then I'm introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. So I go in this meeting, it's full of people like me, all sitting around. There's a flag up like this on the wall, behind the secretary. And I'm looking in the meeting, I think, what the fucking hell is this about? How is this going to stop me smoking crack and doing good? He's a grass, he's this, he's that. What's it sound there? God, 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 fuck this. This ain't a bit of me. So straight away I was like, because I was just terrified. So I was confronted with me. And I wasn't used to that. So anyway, I ran about, I'd done my thing. I was smoking butter for a little while on the landing. And about 2 pence worth of gear, 20 pence worth of butter. And looking for oblivion, but it was like I had a dab of sulfate. It's like, woke me right up having gear. And I just thought, you know, and I remember the last time I used, I was meant to go to a meeting, the flat went, I had the door wedged up, the flat went, it was my mate who was gonna go to the meeting, but obviously I'd scored. And I remember sitting in the Peter that night and I remember thinking, fucking hell, if I get a piss test, I'm fucked. I've already had two. I'm in trouble. And I don't believe in God, but please, please, don't let me get a piss test and I'll try and stay clean. And it's amazing. In that moment, I don't know what happened, but obviously I suppose I surrendered. I couldn't put that language to it, but I suppose in that, I surrendered. And it shifted and it changed. And I went to the meeting the next day and they wasn't all cunts. In fact, I was blown away by what was going on in the meeting. I thought, well, hold on a minute. No one's talking about it, but it's something going on in these meetings. There's a power at work in these meetings. How comes that guy's got the ability to be honest? He comes from a similar place to where I come from. You can't be honest. You don't talk about what's going on to people. Keep your mouth shut. Don't say nothing to no one. I learned that in my home. I learned that around the flats. I learned that wherever I went. Keep your fucking mouth shut. So I just thought, yeah, I'm up for some of this. I really want some of this. I'm up for it. So my mate said to me, well, give it a go for 90 days. If you don't fancy it after that, go and score. Because that's not going over. I thought, oh, I can do that. I'll give it a go for 90 days. That's not long, is it, 90 days? And then they went, total abstinence. What does that mean? Well, you can't have nothing. What are you on about? I ain't got a problem with alcohol. I haven't got a problem with cannabis. I ain't even really got a problem having a sniff. It's only if I put it on the pipe. Well, I can't have nothing ever again. That's a bit strong, isn't it? So what am I going to do New Year's Eve? What am I going to do on my birthday? What am I going to do Christmas? He went, listen, hold on a minute. He said, when's the last time you went out New Year's Eve? He said, you've been in crack houses for the last few years, sitting on stairwells of flats, smoking gear. When's the last time you went out New Year's Eve? I went, well, yeah. It's got a point. I went out 88, I see. He said, that was a while ago, mate. Oh, dear. So, you know what? And I just threw myself into it. Let's have it right. I didn't have much else to do. I wasn't really that distracted. There wasn't really much else to do. So I just threw myself into it. And I learned how to do this. It doesn't say in any of these wonderful books, it doesn't tell you how to share. Doesn't tell you how you need to open your mouth. But I'm very fortunate, I feel very blessed. I was talking to my friend earlier that I come around at a time where the ethos in meetings was just share. Talk about what's going on for you. Come to a meeting, open your mouth, talk about what's going on for you. You're better off doing that than not saying nothing and going out there and sticking a needle in your eye. So just talk about what's going on for you. Learn how to do it. It's terrifying. Terrifying. I couldn't do it. I couldn't open my mouth initially. Do you know what I mean? So someone threw a reading at me. Do that. Get used to hearing your voice. Get used to hearing you say your name out loud. And it, you know, and that's how it works, isn't it? Really simple. And then someone said to me, make the tea at the meeting. Or make the diesel. At the meeting. Make the tea at the meeting. I went, what? Make tea at a meeting. Don't you know who I used to be? Do you know what I mean? Making tea for anyone, that's where I come from. But hold on a minute, who was you, really? Who did you used to be? Wasn't very pretty, was it? But actually, my second thought was, you know what? When's the last time someone wanted to include you in something? Instead of shutting the door in your face, someone said, come on, mate, be a part of this. Come on, you know what I mean? Get involved. So I made the tea. And that's how simple it is. You know, that it's just doing that stuff and feeling connected to it and learning how to share. And then I went through treatment, and treatment's treatment. And how do you feel? How are you feeling? I don't fucking know. How are you feeling? Oh, I'm angry. That's all I could identify. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, I've been very fortunate. In all the years that I've been around, things have just panned out. Things have just, and I've got, I suppose, a few examples of that, right? You know, I grew up in Islington, loved football, obsessed with football as a kid, played football. Obviously wanted to play for Arsenal, didn't get spotted. Got missed, it's unfortunate. I'd been retired now, Keiko, but it didn't happen. So what happened was, after I got out and I'm clean, I'm in recovery, we had an NA team at the time. And we used to play over Ratney Marshes on Sunday. It's like a pub team, but recovering addicts. And we called ourselves Nearly Athletic. It's great, man. It's great. It's like reliving that childhood stuff that I dreamt, you know, playing football. And a lot of them geezers I play football with, they're all my pals still today, and we're all still clean. And coincidentally, we're all Arsenal fans, and we've got season tickets. So, like, every 2 weeks, I'm guaranteed to see them. And I've seen, you know, and I've been to their kids' christenings, and I've been to their weddings, I've been to, you know, like, it's close. And that's one of the key things that's here, really, is that's kept me here for the years and has kept me through difficult times is the people. The people that I've made along the way, the friends that I've made along the way. And another one is still not that great with ladies. I'm a little bit better now, do you know what I mean? I can communicate and talk and say hello, and do you know what I mean? Not really that great, though, put in that situation. So this wonderful woman comes into this institution when I got clean to do a share. Great. Normally, when you know there's an outside share, particularly it's a woman, I was like, I sit at the back. For some reason, that night, I sat at the front. I don't know why. I suppose I passed her, I don't know. Anyway, this girl, she comes in, does the chair, lovely girl, do you know what I mean? She's got about 4 years clean, I'm about 90 days, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, wow, wonderful recovery, what a story she's got, Jesus Christ, if she can stay clean, so can I. So after the meeting, my pal was sending me in literature, I said, do you know him? She went, yeah, of course I do. I said, I'll give him my name and number, tell him I'm going to NA. I'm going to meetings, I've got 90 days clean. She went, yeah, of course I will. She went, all right, yeah. I was like, yeah, all right, yeah. Celebrated 21 years together the other day. So it's a bit like, ain't changed, is it, much? You know what I mean? It's a bit like my mate fancies you. So, oh, right, yeah. All right, then. 21 years, this one's lasted a bit longer. Do you know what I mean? And it's been a journey in itself, do you know what I mean? A relationship with a lovely woman. You know, and anyway, so as I suppose I've been fortunate in that respect. And just want to see how long I've got left.
12 minutes.
Oh, I didn't start it. got 35 minutes. So, you know, anyway, so it suggested you get a sponsor. So after a little while, started to get to meetings out in the community, so I got a sponsor, started to look at the steps, so go through the steps, because I always sort of knew, after getting about 6 months, a year, and I was coming to meetings, I sort of thought, there's a little bit more to this than just coming to meetings. There's a little bit more I want. There's a little bit more on offer than just coming to meetings. And I thought, it is about changing some of this, you know, and having a little... And the steps facilitates that, in the first instance. The steps facilitates that change, I believe, anyway. So, you know, I've got with the sponsor writing steps. I've done the steps in treatment, but that's a different experience, really. So by the time I got to a full step with my sponsor, I was about 4 years clean, something around there. So by then, this stuff is, you know, it's like bubbling. Jesus. So anyway, I'm writing about the fact I never had a relationship with my dad. And I'm realising actually how painful that was, that I never knew this man, this significant person in my life I never had a relationship with. And I'm realising how painful it was. And I remember it was the London Convention at the time. I don't even remember where it was. Well, flew into the marathon meeting. And it was raised hands. I thought, oh, fucking, that's stuck my hand up. Eventually, I got picked. It was a real breakthrough moment for me. I just called on, I said, I'm Chris, I'm an addict. And I just started crying in the meeting because all this gear's going on. And I cried in the meeting and then I shut up and then I bolted out of the meeting and then I went, you know, and it was a breakthrough moment for me. So anyway, all this stuff's going on and I said, oh man, it's difficult. So I'm working through this stuff. Do you know what? I'm so pleased and I'm so glad I've been through that process. It's so, we're so fortunate. I'll talk for myself. I'm so lucky to be able to do that stuff. I'm so lucky because you don't know what's around the corner. You know, to be able to sit down with my family and repair some of that damage that I caused is just priceless. It's priceless. So anyway, I finished that story with my dad, right? And this ties in with me being lucky and fortunate. So I'm writing all that stuff. So this guy rings me up, Bod I know from NA, go to meetings with him. He rings me up and he says, I've got to ask you a question. I said, what's that? He said, what's your mum's name? And I went, fucking hell. It's a weird question with someone in their name. See what I mean? I don't even know your second name and you're asking me my mum's name. And I told him, he said, oh, we've got to meet up, we've got to have a coffee. So we had met up and had a coffee and he went, this is fucking mad. I said, what? He went, we're cousins. I went, what? It's a bit mad, isn't it? He went, my mum's your dad's sister. I was like, wow. So within that following week, I'm around my aunt's house, she's getting all the photos out of my dad. And I'm getting this totally different picture of this man. And I just thought, wow, this is mad. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and I've got lots of little things like that along the way in the years I've been in recovery that have happened. And I just think, oh, it's too much to be a coincidence. I've just been quite blessed and quite lucky around that stuff. But, yeah, you know. So anyway. Then I'll go on to what I was saying as well. So, to be able to see, you know, when I was at it, right, I woke up one morning sick as a pig, right? Went downstairs in my mum's, I was back at my mum's, sick as a pig. My brother's wallet was on the side. Couldn't pass it up. It's gone, right? So I'm out grafting later on that day, at me nut, down the West End with some geezer from King's Cross getting him a pair of trainers in Top Man down Oxford Street. Good idea, right? Completely out of me nut trying to graft my brother's credit card, right? Obviously, I got nicked. So now it's all come on top, right? So they're looking on the credit card and they're going, oh, hold on a minute, that's the same name as you. Oh, is he in on this? I said, no, he's not in on this. I nicked his card. So it all come out around the family, so... And that's when it first sort of come out, the white elephant in the room that I'm where I'm at. And so to be able to sit down with him later on, a few years clean, and have the conversation around that stuff, it's priceless, man. Another example, right? Me and him bought season tickets over Arsenal in 1988, 89. 200 quid they was then. He paid for mine 1 year because I was struggling, wasn't working or whatever, and I knocked him. And I never paid him the money. So when I got to that step 8, step 9, and my sponsor said to me, what I suggest you do is you pay him that £200 back. I was like, oh, yeah, fair enough. He said, and then what I suggest you do in the future is you buy him a season ticket at today's prices. How much are they today? I went, you're fucking out of your mind. £1,000. Well, no chance is that ever going to happen. I'll give him the 200 quid. Yeah, definitely. No chance is he getting the grand. £1,000 season ticket to zip. You know what? This stuff is out of my control. A few months, few years, whatever it was down the line, he was struggling a little bit. I wasn't, and it ended up happening. Wasn't planned or anything, do you know what I mean? So I'm so fortunate to be able to do that, to clear the decks with him. Because 3 years ago, he was at work on a Thursday night, 50 years of age, and he dropped dead. And when I sat, when we was in, when I was there on the Saturday with my mum, and they turned the machine off, and it's still really painful, man. But I could look him in, not in the eye, but I could look at him. And I just, there was nothing there. Do you know what I mean? In terms of like shame or guilt or remorse. It was just real sadness and grief. And I'm really going to miss him. And I still miss him 3 years down the line. I miss him bad. Still, it's like a part of me died that day when he died. Still coming to terms with it. Still painful, clearly. Still painful. So we're really lucky in here. We get the opportunity to do that stuff. We're really lucky that we get the opportunity to do that stuff. And this brings me to finish on this, which brings it into today. It's like there's been times I lose the ability to do what I used to do. Which was what I learned early doors, come to meetings and talk about what's going on. And sometimes I lose the ability to do that. I don't know why, but I lose the ability. So, it's difficult, that's why. It's difficult, because if I open my mouth, that's going to happen. What just happened then. And I pushed it down a bit, otherwise I'd be on the floor, you know, snot coming out my nose and everything. But... So that's why it's difficult. That is why it shuts me down, because it's hard to do that stuff. And but if I don't take care of myself, and I don't come to meetings, and I don't talk to people about that stuff, I'm in trouble. So last year, nice day, finished work, in the car, going around friends with my wife for dinner. In the car, cyclist in front of me. Red flag. He's in the middle of the road. What's he doing in the middle of the road? He shouldn't be in the middle of the road. He's taking the piss. Lost it. So I pulled up by the side of him, wound my window down, went, do you want to play games? Just gone. Took him off his bike, shut off. But as soon as I'd done it, and then I realised, I thought, oh no, and I turned and I looked and there was my wife. And I just, oh man, what have I done? And then a few months later, Metropolitan Police, nice little brown envelope through the door. A few months ago, Stratford Magistrates, standing in the dock, thinking, oh my God, what am I doing here? 18 months driving ban, £1,300 fine, 24 weeks suspended for a year, and 200 hours community service. And I just thought, oh man. Whew. In good company, the bird off Skye's just got it, didn't she? Community service. Wayne Rooney got a bit of community service. So that's the bill. For me anyway, that was the bill. So it was a real wake-up call and a real kick up the arse. So I've had to really, the last few months, is take it back to basics. Go to meetings, talk about what's going on, talk to people on the phone. Don't take it for granted. Because I may not pick up drugs, and I haven't. But I end up in situations like that. I don't look after myself. Or I end up doing things I don't want to do. And I've done that over the years. I've done a lot, not a lot, but I've done stuff to take the dairy off how I'm feeling. That's why I use drugs. Didn't like how I was feeling. I do that in recovery. Where are we at? Did you give me 10 minutes?
Oh, yeah, 20 minutes ago.
You didn't do it very...
I told you. You said how long was it? 12 minutes. I told you. Jesus Christ.
Not having
anyway,
the show
say good night.
So anyway, yeah. Oh, dear. But you know what? As long as I do stay clean and I don't, you know, I've got half a chance. This other stuff that goes on in recovery, this life stuff, this human being stuff, I've got half a chance as long as I stay clean. And I'll just keep coming and I'll just keep trying and I'll just keep making mistakes along the way. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris.